Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hello, welcome to Full Time with Meg Linehan. You are listening to a podcast all about women's soccer on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm Meg, your host, and I'm a staff writer at the Athletic covering the NWSL and the U.S. Women's National Team. So definitely a different episode for you today because this is actually a bonus episode. Allie Wagner is on the pod to help us preview She Believes Cup so that way you know exactly what you should be watching for ahead of this tournament. The games start on February 18th. We've got three game days. We've got Brazil, Argentina, and Canada in the country, every single game in Orlando. Allie Wagner is going to be the analyst on every single U.S. Women's National Team game, and it is always great to pick her brain about how she is watching, how she is trying to think about this team, and to basically, you know, actually figure out if we're on the same page or not. So without any further ado, here is Allie. First thing that I wanted to talk to you about She Believes Cup is that, you know, when you think about the history of this tournament, we're in the sixth edition now. The opponents that we're used to seeing are the Englands, the Spains, France, Germany, like big kind of European teams. Like we used to kind of have a joke about it in the NWSL office that this was like the winter prestige tournament and that Tournament of Nations was just like pure chaos, summer fun, right? But now, you know, we're getting teams that we're not necessarily used to seeing in this tournament. So how do we put the results for the U.S. Women's National Team in the right context with this version of She Believes Cup?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, actually, because it's twofold, right? So you look at where we are in the season, if you will, so where the team is in their development, it's earlier than it ever has been before. And then that other aspect of the strength of the opponent is not at the level consistently through the tournament that it has been. So I think you got to take it case by case. And Brazil, when I'm going to this tournament, I think Brazil is going to be the toughest challenge for the U.S. And I think they actually could pose some problems. You know, you look at the way the U.S. typically is played, teams they struggle with are teams that can get expansive on them, teams that can match their physicality, teams that can match their pace. And I think Brazil checks those boxes. I do think they have still some weak links in the back line that the U.S. will look to get after, you know, and I don't think that Brazil is on the same level as the United States yet. I think that the U.S. benefited massively by actually the COVID year, which is sad to say, but I think of all the teams, the U.S. probably comes out ahead if we're talking about marginal gains, right? And or relative gains. So I think the U.S. is in a really good position when you look at Canada. Not having those big name players it's a massive blow. I mean, to be fair, they didn't even compete that well, you know, in the CONCACAF those qualifiers that we had. Mm-hmm. So the U.S. again was just on a different level, and I expect the same thing from that match. And then Argentina, you know, we just got off a call with them, and they haven't been together for a year and a half.
Right.
You know, they got together on Friday. And they're going to have basically, what is that, 5 days before their first game. So what do we expect from a nation, you know, that has struggled historically in these big ties already? So yeah, I don't know that we're going to learn a ton, but the reality is it's not, Vlatko's the one that's got to learn from this tournament, mm-hmm. right? So he's got to set certain standards for certain players because these are the moments that are going to teach him who should be in or out going into the Olympics. Yeah. There's not going to be for them.
Yeah, I mean, that perfectly leads into the next question. And this is a conversation that I've had. You know, Heather O'Reilly was on the podcast and Steph Young was on the podcast and talking to folks and just being like, you know, we're seeing one piece of the puzzle, right? And how do we interpret the results of games like this where, you know, these are data points in a much larger context in this kind of like Vlatko experiment, right, of building a national team. And he's got so much more data. So how do we try to mimic how he's perhaps evaluating some of those performances? If he's setting a standard for Crystal Dunn, potentially even playing multiple roles within this team now, like how do we kind of maybe try to tap into where his brain is at right now?
I honestly don't even think any of us can scratch that surface. That when I spoke to him, you know, I hit him up during COVID. Hey, I want to learn about some things. And the amount of data, as you said, that they have on every player is insane. Mm-hmm. The detail that goes into every single role on the pitch at any given moment is insane. So when we look at it as fans and hopefully as analysts, as we claim to be, which, you know, we can all debate that, the reality of that, but we're the tip of the iceberg, right? Mm-hmm. And I hope we're maybe a layer below. He's looking down at the core, and I think seeing a lot of things that we don't understand, and how people want to look at things and isolate it. Dunn being left back. Dunn is a 10. You know, are we playing a false nine? Are we playing an out and out striker, right? You want to isolate it. But the reality is there's a relationship that within every position, every role, every player, there's so many relationships and how they impact each other, how they coalesce, how they actually, you know, manipulate the defense that is another layer that a lot of people maybe don't consider. Right. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to factor in, did this player take two steps this way? Did this player take three steps this way? You know, that those are checking off boxes for Vlatko. So we're not even going to get there. We don't really know what he wants for, I think, in that much detail, but I think we can understand the players. I think we can understand the relationships.
Right. So that leads into what I was hoping to talk to you about, just in terms of looking at even the past 10 years, maybe, of the national team. The versatility of players feels like it is so far above and beyond. Like, I remember, you know, definitely having debates about whether Lauren Holiday was being played in the right position or not. But I feel like we are in a completely different stratosphere of outside backs being able to play center back, being able to play anywhere on the wing, right? Like, you can slot players in so many different positions. We're looking at changing roles for Mitch Purse, right? Like, there's just so many more layers of it. And are you seeing how that versatility might, A, make us harder to understand where this team is at in terms of like a roster projection, but also just the progression of the game?
You know, it's interesting. It's actually interesting that you view it that way, because I think I look at it I look at it a little bit differently, which is that I think we actually have more specialists, right? But we have specialists that, because of rotations that occur naturally on the field, you automatically learn kind of the role of another position, right?
Yeah.
So you're taking a 10 and now the 10 is pulling wide, suddenly they became a winger because maybe Dunn stayed home in that moment, right? And Rapinoe's inside and look, she's playing as a 10, or now she's an inside forward. And so Rapinoe's an out and out winger, right? She owns that spot,
right?
But very comfortable existing in another spot on the field. And so that's where I think the evolution has come in for the women's game, for the US in particular, is just the understanding of rotations that can occur. People being comfortable getting out of what used to be their spot on the field.
Okay.
You know, I remember actually it's really interesting. I remember way back when I was playing for Pia, and this was right before she was going to pick, I think it was the 2008 team. And we were at a tournament and she put me in, and I was playing, like, we were playing a diamond midfield, if I remember correctly. And I was on the left, and she was very fascinated with the idea of just go somewhere else, you know, just go somewhere else. And as players, we were like, well, what does that even mean? What do you mean go somewhere else? Like, I do you want me to go? You don't want me on the back line. We can all agree that's a bad decision, you know? And I once just, you know, the ball was on the other side of the field. I was sick of not getting it. And I hightailed it to the opposite side of the pitch and ended up getting involved in a buildup. You know, we had a really, you know, good attacking phase, and then came back. And I remember after the game, she's like, that's exactly what I'm talking about, you know? And so I think that was like my first national team coach that promoted that. In college, I had Jerry Smith, who was always about place changing, but it was more like if you go high, someone else comes low. You have the freedom to go there. And it wasn't like go straight on the other side of the field the way a Griezmann does, the way a Messi does, right? Mm-hmm. There was more structure to it. With Pia, it was go over there. And so anyways, I just think that players are evolving into understanding how to pick up space, how to make space on the field, how to create space for themselves and for teammates. And I think that's the biggest evolution I see.
All right.
But we can talk about if you want to.
I mean, okay. So, but bringing up Pia now, this is going to be, She Blues Cup is the first chance that we're really going to have to get a look at Pia as head coach of Brazil. Like, there have been some friendlies and kind of intra-squad scrimmages for Brazil, but like, this is really kind of the big test for Brazil ahead of the Olympics. What are your expectations? I super agree with you. I think USA versus Brazil is the most interesting game and I think probably the most challenging game for the US in this tournament. But what are you hoping to see from Brazil and maybe from Pia against her former team?
You know, I'm curious to see how she's evolved as a coach, first and foremost, right? Because we've seen her at the helm with the US. I played under her and then she went to Sweden and now Brazil. So I'm really curious to see how she's evolving, but she's got a very different set of tools in her bag. She's got a whole different set of clubs, right? And when you're in Brazil, the one thing what I even just spoke about was she wasn't great at structure because we didn't need to have structure, right? Sweden, flash forward, very structured, mm-hmm. and we're able to obviously upset the US in that time period. So I think the structure that she can if she can supply that and get that team to understand how to be solid defensively, to not be as chaotic in their build, not be as individual and move through the phases as a unit without taking away the creativity and the individuality that they obviously need to express and should express. That's what I'm interested in seeing. And that's what I'm expecting, is that you're going to see just a more cohesive unit in Brazil. And I do think it's interesting that they already extended her contract. The challenge will come up, like you said, is how long has she had with these women to be able to impart her vision.
Right.
And so I actually spoke to her offline and she had said, you know, look, COVID was really challenging for us. We really didn't get together and it did set us back. But she feels really positive about some of the players that are playing over in Europe and how that's helping evolve some of those individuals. And she's super high on Rafaela in the back line, one of the center backs. And if you watch the way she plays, I think she's an interesting one that likes to bring the ball out. Obviously been a previous attacking player. And then I do think they have interesting players around. You know, I like what she's done with Marta, moving her back into a lower role. Mm-hmm. Pitch, right? That's where she's going to exist at this point in her career. And I think that's a little bit more difficult for teams to handle because midfielders really don't want to track and they don't want to be responsible defensively. Whereas defenders love that battle. I'm going to stop Marta, right? And that 1v1 mentality. So I'm very curious to see what happens, but I think that structure is something that they'll benefit from.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
All right, so let's talk about Canada for a little bit, because as you said earlier, you know, a lot of big players missing. I definitely agree with the fact that they did not necessarily look at, you know, peak form in CONCACAF qualifiers, though they, you know, CONCACAF qualifiers are also their own kind of particular thing to try to analyze teams as they go through them. But one of the things that I think really struck me reading some of the comments from Bev Priestman's media availability is there's still such this talking point in Canada about players being brave. And that was something that she talked a lot about. And it really does. I mean, she was an assistant coach under John Herdman, but that was such a like John Herdman talking point for Canada. And I feel like, sure, like players should be brave, but there's still so many other things that the team could probably sort to figure out that might also benefit where they're at ahead of the Olympics.
That's such a good point. I mean, when I think of Canada, I don't think of players that aren't brave, right? That's not the thing that jumps out at me is like, that's, you know, that if we're going to work on weaknesses, that's area number one we would target. That's just not where I would spend my capital. But having said that, you know, brave in challenges, brave in the battle is different from brave on the ball. And, you know, my guess is that's where she's talking about bravery and being able to play out of difficult situations. You know, I just think the Canada squad, they keep, this is going to be pinned on their walls. Not that they care what I say, but ultimately like this is fuel for their fire. I mean, they've just underperformed, right? And I think they've underdelivered for so long. We've had expectations for them to continue to progress and to really vie consistently with the US, and that just hasn't happened. So I think this is a team that has really special players. Again, we're not going to necessarily see them all in She Believes, but like a Jessie Fleming, you know, how has she gone under the radar this long for Canada? Or a Huitema, how long have we heard about Huitema being the next great thing? And just none of that coming to fruition at this point. And look, everyone takes a different path in their development. So I'm not at all at the point to write them off and say that they don't have a massive future in this game. I think they both can, but we're just not seeing the progression that I think you would expect to see out of individuals. And then as the squad in general, and, you know, as great and amazing as Sink is, you know, has her long established role on that team hindered them at all? You know, I think that's something that perhaps, you know, Bev is going to have to deal with. How do you utilize Sinclair, you know, heading into the Olympics? That's going to be a tough management call for, I think, for a young coach to come in and make.
Right. I mean, it just reminds me to kind of the flip for goalkeepers for the U.S. Women's National Team. I mean, that's kind of always been the one thing that we always think about the most of, like, you have such this kind of like dedicated number one in some sort of role. And then you know that you need to eventually flip into a new player. How do you massage that transition to as kind of transition for both sides of both the team, the player, you know, everyone involved? So it's not necessarily an easy one, but Canada is, I mean, I think it's going to be very interesting to watch them in this tournament and see if, you know, this is kind of like almost like their approach to how the Challenge Cup was, maybe in a way, just where like you get a chance to see players that maybe we haven't seen before that can, you know, get a chance to shine on a brighter stage that they might have gotten otherwise.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And you're making me think of almost in the men's game, you know, how valuable you look at the different competitions that they have, right? And you've got Champions League and some have Europa League, but then you've got your cup competitions and then you've got your league play. And a lot of those players that are trying to get into the first team, you know, they get their experience or they get their opportunities come cup time, you know, in those early games. And some of these players just aren't experiencing that because we don't maybe have that on the women's side, right? In the club competition. But then with the national team, they're a lot of the coaches, you go out there to win. And they don't go out there to develop, you know, and it's that fine line of keeping their job, keeping the team moving and progressing individuals as they should be handled, you know, at that level. So I'm with you. I think it could be an exciting tournament to be able to see some of the younger players that don't get as much time and maybe players that can take on a bigger role. If you look at like a Nichelle Prince or Deanne Rose or the left wing back, blanking on her name right now.
Yeah, that's that's probably beyond me at 9 o'clock at night when we're recording this right now.
Fair enough. It'll come to me. But, you know, certain players that can make a, I think, make a move in this tournament and try to stake a claim on a spot.
Right. All right. So one more team for this competition. It is a team that the U.S. Women's National Team has only played three times over the span of its career. Last time U.S. played Argentina, it was 2014. Alyssa Nayer actually got her debut, which was a fun little trivia point on her media availability the other week. But yeah, I mean, is there maybe some advantage for the U.S. to play kind of this relatively unknown team? Like, you know, you can watch what Argentina did in the 2019 World Cup, but like, this is a team that they haven't really gotten a lot of experience for. And is that helpful ahead of a major tournament?
Yeah, I think that's, again, my great question, great point, because, you know, we even saw it a little bit with Colombia. When they went into that match, as much scouting as you could do, you still couldn't scout all those players. You didn't know all those players, or the information was very limited. And I think it's actually a massive asset for the U.S. to have that, because when the players go into a game right now, they're dealt a, you know, a very important card of here's what to expect. Here's what we expect. Here's what the players in your position likely do. And so they have a good understanding of what they're about to face, but there are going to be times in the Olympic Games that you're going to roll out there and something is not going to go as expected. And so it is really good for these players to, as much as, you know, the staff will try to prepare them, to maybe be faced with something that they weren't ready for, and to get out there and to try to solve things without the coach calling in it from the sideline, to be able to read and understand what is happening in real time and to shift and to get everyone on the same page without, you know, going into the locker room and at halftime and then understanding what is about to occur. So I think you're right on that. Listen, one of the big advantages of playing in Argentina, while it might not be the most competitive match, and maybe it will be. You never know. Look what they were able to do, like you said, in the World Cup. But if the wrinkle that they throw at the U.S. is the unknown, that's an asset, and that's going to make the players think and become better footballers, I think, ultimately. And perhaps, look, maybe when we're talking about how is Vlaco evaluating some of these players, perhaps for some of them, it's are they understanding the game? Can they think in real time? Can they problem solve? And maybe that is, you know, something that he looks to learn from specific individuals.
Right. Okay. So I think one big last one, but is there a player that you think people should be watching for the U.S. Women's National Team throughout this tournament that is not necessarily even maybe on the bubble, but one that you think we're going to benefit from watching over a more consistent three games in kind of a more tournament setting?
Meaning we're gonna understand their form, or?
I think probably form.
Okay. I think you've got to go with, there's a few. Do I have to nail?
You don't have to. You can pick whatever, right. However many.
I think that Carly Lloyd is a big one. You know, I think if Alex Morgan, I'm not sure how fit she's going to be, if she's going to get minutes, but I think any of those players that are on that bubble of, you know, are they going to be in form and fit and ready for the Olympics, or are they not? You know, those are the ones that you're talking about. So I think that's got to be the older players, with a Lloyd, with even a Rapinoe, which I assume she's in great form. And I think the work that Lloyd has done in Vlaco's system is very valuable, and I think he values it. So even if it's not on the score sheet, I think there is value to what she's doing as that false nine and freeing up other players around her. Right. Mm-hmm. So if we're talking about evaluation, it might not just be in the, you know, goals and assists category. And then I think you've got to look at two younger players, like Kat Macario and Sophia Smith, right. And see what those two players can bring, because I would put those two names as someone that Vlaco likely has to bring into the fold if they're close to getting into that 18. I think you gamble on them. I think you give them experience just to prepare them for the World Cup. But I don't even think Macario is going to be close. I think she's going to be in.
Okay, yeah. I was going to say, I had Macario and kind of like expectations. And I think, you know, before her debut, right, like as everyone's waiting, everyone's like, well, okay, like let's maybe almost like lower our expectations for her, just so that way we're not like overhyping. And now I think post Columbia, everyone's like, oh no, we didn't do enough hyping. We actually called that wrong.
Yeah, I think you're right. But I also think we kind of scarred ourselves a little bit with Pew, right? And she just took off, and she was going to be the next great thing. And then she's really stalled in her development. And is at a point right now where, you know, she might be one of those first names that gets cut down from that 23 to 18, unless she can get healthy and start to show what she did before.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think with Pew, the exciting thing is finding another new NWSL home, seeing what that does for her development, right? Like, I mean, the nice thing with Vlatko is that we know for a fact that you can look at NWSL stuff and know that that is data that he is considering. We might not know how highly it ranks, but we know that he is watching.
Yeah, no, you're right on. And he sees it, again, differently than we even see it. So I think those are massive data points for him. And of course, NWSL, it was his birthplace, really. So ton of respect there. And that's an asset for us as, you know, Americans, that we know that he'll consider the whole pool of players. Look what he's doing with Kristi Mewis, right? And some way back when, I'm not going to say when, but that player like that might not have made it into camp.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, that's kind of the exciting thing. But also, even, you know, when I asked him about the goalkeeping pool, and everyone always kind of thinks of the goalkeeping pool as like 3 to 4 players. And he was like, oh, no, let me list you 10. And I was like, oh, OK.
Yeah, exactly.
Again, Vlatko, you are far ahead of me in the thought process. OK.
Yes.
Good reminder.
Yes. And by the way, this is his day job. All right.
Yeah.
So he better be ahead of us. Otherwise, we're in serious. We have serious issues and we can forget about 2023.
All right. Any other thoughts before we call it on this? I feel like we've done a pretty good job of walking through the tournament, but anything else?
I want your pick. Who comes first, second, third, fourth? That's what I want.
Who? I mean, I feel like it's going to be US, Brazil, Canada, Argentina. Like, I just feel like there's probably not going to be a huge amount of surprises, but I think if there's a team that could upset the US, like, my money's on Brazil. But also, I mean, I feel like you know about this. Me, I am so extremely high on Dabinha as a player. So.
Me too. She was my number one player to watch in the tournament. I know I'm going to get a lot of hate mail for that, but by far.
I mean, we were both at the 2019 NWSL Championship where she was MVP of the championship. Like,
and 2018 would have been, but was hurt in the semi, remember? Mm-hmm. And so show up, and that game probably ends differently if Dabinha's in 2018.
All right.
Yeah. All right. Good reminiscing. We're old. I'm old.
Well, you know, as I joke today is actually my birthday. And I was like, if I was on the U.S. Women's National Team roster, Vlatko would be kicking me off for how old I am.
Happy birthday to you, Meg.
All right. Well, yeah. We will end it there since I struggle with my birthday. So thank you, Allie, for joining us. I'm sure we will all be watching and looking forward to your analysis. It is one of my favorite things about watching the women's national team games is when I get to hear you break them down, because I'm like, oh, yeah, I should steal that later.
Don't. It's risky. Meg, I'm telling you.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us.
Appreciate it. Cheers. It was great.
All right. So that was Allie Wagner, thankfully coming on to preview She Believes Cup for you. Hopefully you find that helpful. Hopefully it helps you watch the games in maybe a slightly different mindset. But, you know, again, we are all just out here trying to put together Vlatko Andonovski's little puzzle of a roster and hoping that we keep up with him. All right, so we will be back tomorrow. We've got a great episode on the way in your feeds, as always. So make sure, if you don't already subscribe, that you subscribe, rate, review, all the usual stuff I tend to say at the end of episodes. But because this is a bonus, I'm going to skip it and save it for tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Full Time with Meg Linehan. Our producer is Michael Zimmerman. I'm Meg Linehan at The Athletic.